When we share someone's story here on the Diaries, the episode might end, but their story doesn't. So many of the people we've talked to, they've gone on to do incredible things. They have epic adventures and make significant impacts in our community. Over on Diaries Plus, we're catching up with some of our former guests to see what they've been up to. I recently sat down with Connor Ryan, a Lakota professional skier from our Sacred Slopes episode, who's been knocking out groundbreaking projects ever since the episode aired. It's really incredible. We had a great discussion about the impacts he's made, what keeps his fire burning, and taking ski lessons as a pro skier. Here's a snippet of the conversation.
All the source of joy that I use to fill my cup to be out in the world doing positive things comes from my relationship to the outdoors. And so I really focused on like, wow, like there's so much power if I can give one person the relationship to the outdoors that I have through skiing. And maybe that will have as profound of an effect on them as it's had on me.
To listen to the full episode, use the link in the show notes to subscribe to Diaries Plus today. Yeah, you get more shows, but you also have a peace of mind of powering what's out there right now, keeping us moving forward, keeping this community together. So thank you for everyone who supported and everyone who's going to support. We appreciate it.
Is that your dog? Pat and I turned from the fire, and a very tall, very angry man was looking at us and pointing at Lyle, a skinny, red and white Brittany Spaniel. Lyle stood behind the tall man, looking small next to a big female, Nikita. I said, "Is that your fucking dog?" Lyle looked tired and happy. He wagged his tail a little when we looked at him. Everybody loved Lyle. He had that sheepish look that is impossible to be mad at. That's our friend Curtis's dog. He's still out surfing," I said. "Yeah, dude, your dog totally fucked my dog last night." Pat and I looked at each other, eyebrows high, mouths shut tight, holding back laughter. Behind the man, Lyle had made his way over to the Nikita and was gently humping her face, her big, fluffy head bowing to little Lyle's tired but rhythmic movements. Lyle looked at us, still humping. Pat and I could not hold it together. We exploded with laughter, which made the tall man even angrier, and he yelled something about it being the Nikita's first heat and not wanting puppies. I went over and grabbed Lyle, barely able to breathe, I was laughing so hard. When I finally controlled my laughing fit, I told the tall man we'd send Curtis over as soon as he got out of the water. Curtis, Pat, Troy, and I were on a super remote section of coast in Northern California. With no roads to this wave, we had hiked in a dozen or so miles along the beach from the nearest town the day before as a huge swell raged next to us. There were spots on the hike where I could feel the ground vibrating as 12-foot waves pounded the sand and sent white water freight training up the beach at us. It was gnarly. Kinda scary, actually. We timed our hike so we'd cross a particular section at low tide. At high tide, the water goes right up to the cliffs, and with a swell like this, that is not where we wanted to be. So we hurried along, feeling small with our surfboards strapped to our packs, leaning into the wind as the swell raged. The beach narrowed as the cliffs to our right approached the sea. We crawled up the low point in these cliffs, an awkward little boulder problem made more difficult with packs and boards, leaving the beach for a well-defined trail that meandered leisurely through a flat meadow. It went another couple miles to where we set up camp amongst other surfers by the wave. This was definitely not the first adventure that Curtis, Pat, Troy, and I had been on together. Over the past decade, we'd been roommates, worked together at ski resorts and on fishing boats, went to school together, and went on surf and ski trips whenever we could. As we set up camp, we each knew how it would play out. Pat, the perpetual minimalist, would hastily set up his tent, throw his pack in it, and get in the water as soon as he could, motivating the rest of us with his stoke. Curtis would follow quickly behind, being somewhat less of a minimalist, but having an efficiency in his movements that allows him to accomplish things quickly. Troy would obviously have the biggest pack with the comfiest pad and be the most prepared. He would take his time to set things up right, and we would no doubt be begging him for snacks on the third day. I was somewhere in the middle, making a huge fire so we could warm up after the evening surf. The surf was big, cold, and scary. Not wanting to pack out the proper size board for the conditions, I was hopelessly undergunned and flailing in the giant surf. But I managed to grab a couple inside scraps before heading to the fire shivering. Everyone came back in as the light faded, warming hands by the fire before peeling off wetsuits. We ate some food, drank some beers, and joked around the fire for a while. We crawled into tents pretty early so we could get on the surf before the wind in the morning. The next morning's surf was equally as large, cold, and scary. My hands were still trying to warm up as I held Lyle's collar and led him away from the Nikita, still chuckling and shaking my head. When Curtis got out of the water, he went and smoothed things over with the tall man. Curtis can make friends with anybody. He has the charisma and work ethic of a dedicated farmer, the intellect and open mind of a college student, and the wild, adventurous spirit of a skier and surfer. He'd recently moved back to work on his family's farm and was exploring all that Northern California and Southern Oregon had to offer when he wasn't growing hay. It turned out the tall man and Curtis had met at another surf spot in Oregon when Curtis was traveling around with his surfboard strapped to his motorcycle. The tall man said we could have some puppies if his dog were actually pregnant. We sat around the fire with him and some other surfers through the rest of the morning. When the tall man left to catch the low tide on his hike out, we bid him farewell and went for another surf. That evening, we sat around the fire eating dinner. Lyle was nowhere to be found, and Curtis was calling for him. Lyle tended to wander a lot, so we weren't worried, but we hadn't seen him since we got out of the water. Curtis was calling for Lyle again when our friend Kai came jogging up the trail looking serious. Kai was a local, a very gifted surfer, and sometimes seemed so relaxed that he might fall asleep at any moment, so to see him moving fast on land was kind of funny. Earlier in the day, he had hiked out to catch the low tide. It was now well past low tide.
Curtis, dude, it's about your dog, man. I saw Lyle like 5 miles down the beach.
We were shocked Lyle had wandered so far. The little romantic was probably following his Nikita girlfriend. We were also shocked that Kai had added a whole nother night to his trip just to tell us this. We asked him what he was gonna do. He shrugged shyly.
Swell's still good, dude. I'll just surf and hike out tomorrow.
Kai, what a legend. We thanked him and offered him some food, but Curtis had sprung into action, emerging from his tent with a super light day pack. There was no persuading him not to go. There'd be beach for another hour, and Curtis was a fast hiker. He had a first aid kit and a headlamp. Curtis was the first of our friends to get a dog, so Lyle went on almost every adventure with us, no matter how gnarly. From the time he was a puppy, he'd been tossed off countless cornices, chased after us as we skied steep chutes, and wandered tick-infested coastlines as we surfed. He'd witnessed the biggest avalanche I'd ever triggered. Not my proudest moment, but I remember being comforted by Lyle's happy demeanor and sheepish little tail wag. So yeah, Lyle could handle anything, but I understood why Curtis wanted his dog back before the cold North Pacific night was upon us. Kai, Pat, Troy, and I sat back around the fire, chuckling about Lyle's stories. About an hour later, we started to wonder where Curtis might be. Not worry, just curiosity. As the sun neared the sea, the fog crept back in, slowly swallowing us in gray as the sky above turned orange. The fog subdued our conversation, and it was dark before we knew it. Our curiosity edged toward worry when we heard the helicopter beating its way from the north, passing over us with its spotlight on. We decided we should look for Curtis. As we dressed for night travel, the caretakers of the lone house that sat tucked below the coastal mountains approached our fire. They had been alerted by search and rescue that there was an accident down the beach. We bombarded them with questions, but they had few details. We sprang up and jogged down the trail in the dark.
Curtis!
He was a ski patroller, rock climber, surfer, farmer, and one of the most competent dudes we knew. Nothing could happen to him. Could it?
After the break, the crew heads out to find Curtis. Stay with us.
Support for the Diaries comes from Ketone IQ. As I've been getting more and more into longer runs and bike rides, I found myself fighting with my mind. As the miles extend, I feel like my reactions get slower and I make more mistakes, like tripping or falling, or just kind of feeling slightly out of sync descending on the bike. On those big days, I've been using Ketone IQ to help my brain keep fueled and sharp. I want to have fun, not bonk. Here's the science. Ketones already exist in your body. When you push up against your boundaries, your body begins to convert stored fat into ketones, which your brain prefers consuming. With Ketone IQ, I feed my brain so my muscles can use the glucose I get from whatever else I eat on the trail. Riders of the Tour de France have been taking the same approach. I am definitely not as fast, but I can apply the same thinking. Give it a try. You save 30% off your first subscription order at ketone.com/dirtbagdiaries. Once again, that's ketone.com/dirtbagdiaries. The link is in the show notes. Please check it out. This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Maybe you've got a side gig that you want to get started. Well, I think the time is now, my friend, but you're going to need a website. Whatever it is, Squarespace's all-in-one website platform is designed with people like you and me in mind. So when we've built our websites or had to redo them, because that's happened multiple times through the years, we choose Squarespace because it's easy to build with, it's customizable, and it's a cinch to update, so fewer headaches. And reality, it gets us back to doing what we're really good at, which is making podcasts. Squarespace tools make it easy to showcase and even sell whatever your heart desires. Their new interactive design experience is called Squarespace Blueprint AI. I think it's pretty neat because it gives you more design control, layouts, fonts, color palettes, and more, allowing for your website to stand out in its own unique way. Answer 5 questions and you're ready to go. And if you're selling something, they have many flexible payment options for your customers. You can use PayPal, credit cards, Apple Pay. It makes checkout seamless for you and your customers. Check out Squarespace for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/diaries to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. This episode of the Dirtbag Diaries is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hey, we all have different stressors in our lives, and figuring out how to work and grow through them is part of being human. For me, being outside, moving my body, it's always been a critical part of my mental health, and maybe for you too, but there's also been times where no amount of fresh air or exertion would have gotten me through what was weighing me down. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and grow. Talking with a therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries, develop positive coping skills, or manage a difficult life transition. Here's how it works. Go to the website, answer a few questions, and BetterHelp will match you with a licensed therapist. The appointments are all online, so it's convenient to schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/diaries to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/diaries.
We jogged on in silence with the oppressive fog all around us, our headlamps only illuminating the trail right in front of our feet, passing a few other camps. When we reached the low point in the sea cliffs where we had scrambled up the day before, we encountered a scene that none of us were ready for. Grab the fucking stretcher! Curtis yelled at us as icy water sloshed around his ankles. He held the back of a makeshift driftwood stretcher. At the front was a stranger, frantically trying to get the stretcher up the little boulder problem that was the low point in the cliffs. On the stretcher was another stranger with a very crudely bandaged and very bloody leg. With all of us there, we managed to get the stretcher and patient up the cliff and started carrying him as a team up the trail. We commandeered the nearest camp we could find and hastily threw wood on the fire, placing the stretcher next to the growing flames. Troy was the only one that had the foresight to bring his sleeping bag when we left camp. We wrapped the shivering and bleeding man in the bag and added more wood to the fire. The story emerged in fits of questions and crazy answers. Curtis had been moving fast along the beach in the dangerous low tide only section when he heard someone call out, "Help!" up by the cliffs. Curtis was annoyed. He had a dog to find. He contemplated ignoring the call, but knew he couldn't do that. At the base of the cliff, he found 2 people. Another surfer, who'd been hiking out, had called out to Curtis and was now on the phone with the Coast Guard. At this man's feet, laying out upon the black coastal rocks, was an older man crumpled and covered in blood. The bluff above was 50 feet tall, ending in 30 feet of vertical rock. Curtis's wilderness medicine skills overtook all thoughts of Lyle. They had to get this man off the beach, and they had to do it fast. The tide was coming. After tending to the wounds, the most severe of which turned out to be a compound femur fracture, they made a stretcher out of driftwood, a backpack, and two surf leashes as the tide moved ever closer, tying the last knots and lifting the man up as the biggest waves pushed water to their ankles. They began carrying the man up the beach and toward the notch in the cliff as the high tide threatened. It was not far, but they had to stop often, and the whole time Curtis was wondering how they were going to get their patient up that little boulder problem. They had just reached it when he saw our headlamps coming down the hill, a sight he described as miraculous. If I wasn't sitting right next to the man by the fire, hadn't helped carry him the last mile, I wouldn't have believed it. The man on the stretcher was an ultra runner, attempting to run the entire length of roadless coastline from one town to another, north to south. Where the trail dips down to the beach, at the low point in the cliffs, there's a faint goat trail going up the cliffs to the south. The runner had missed the notch and continued along the goat trail. He realized his mistake and slipped as he was turning around. He was lucky Curtis and the other surfer had found him. He was lucky to be alive. As we listened to Curtis and the other surfer, the helicopter circled above us. The aircraft knew exactly where we were, but couldn't land due to the dense fog. So we had to wait by the fire as a team of rescuers pushed over the mountains to our east through fire roads and trails. At about 2 a.m, we finally passed the patient off to the search and rescue team. The team had crossed the coastal range via a series of logging roads in a specialized ATV, and then hiked the remaining distance with a litter on a trail wheel. Within minutes of their arrival, the rescuers wheeled the patient off, and we walked through the cold fog back to camp. Exhausted, we didn't surf the next morning. We had planned to leave that evening, but everyone was anxious to look for Lyle. So we packed up and left to beat the midday high tide. The trail looked so much different than the night before, so benevolent with little wildflowers everywhere. But visions of the fog-oppressed camp and bloody injuries being briefly illuminated by a helicopter's searchlight came in and out of my mind like a wild nightmare. We passed the cliff the man had fallen from and looked up. Shaking our heads, we hoped the runner was okay. We also hoped we would see Lyle soon. We tried to console Curtis, but we were all worried. What if he tried to come back at high tide? Would he sleep in some remote coastal canyon cut off by the sea in both directions, hiding from the bears and coyotes? Maybe he's just waiting for us at the truck. Maybe he found his Nikita and went home with the tall man. We pushed on, quietly going through scenarios in our minds. About halfway through the hike, we saw Lyle trotting up the beach from the south. He was very wet, very tired, and seemed very happy to see us. He immediately ran to Curtis with that sheepish tail wag. Curtis was beaming and hooting as he rubbed Lyle in the sand. Out of all of the drama on that trip, this is what I wish I had a picture of the most. It was a quintessential boy and his dog moment. I watched Curtis and Lyle wrestling in the sand. Two souls with such a propensity for adventure that put us in a wild place right when someone else needed it. That night happened 9 years ago this April. A few months ago, Curtis called me and told me that Lyle had passed away. I smiled and reminisced on all the adventures that we'd had with Lyle. We don't get out as a crew as much as we used to, but thinking about Lyle makes it seem important. Lyle's comforting little tail wag marked a special time in our lives when our priorities were different and our threshold for risk was higher. Thinking back on this story in particular makes me think that we were supposed to be there in that wild place, in that wild time. My name is Tyler Homan, and that was my short.
Thank you, Tyler, for sharing your story with us today. The runner who fell has a deep gratitude for the people who helped him, including the surfers, volunteer firefighters, search and rescue, and the Coast Guard who helped and coordinated the rescue. He wrote, "I owe my life to everyone involved." Our stories come from friends, from friends of friends, and from you, our community. If you have a compelling idea for a guest or a story lead, please give us a shout. You can use the submission form on our website, dirtbagdiaries.com. Music today from Surf and Our Many Stars. The tracks are courtesy of Track Club. You can find the links on our website. The episode was produced by Becca Hall with additional production help from Ashley Langholtz and Evan Phillips. Becca Hall is our executive producer. I'm Fitz Call, and you've been listening to the Dirtbag Diaries. Thanks for tuning in.